20 years and hundreds of billions of dollars in support, equipment, and training did not suffice, why would another year?
Tough questions on Afghanistan withdrawal. It's Wednesday, September 15th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Chris Cascale in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Turkey says no more refugees, renewing the call for vaccine equity, retraining pandemic job seekers, new powerful nano lasers, robots help nurses work. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken defended the U.S. evacuation from Afghanistan for the first time before a congressional panel. Lawmakers, Republicans as well as several Democrats, criticized the Biden administration's handling of the chaotic August withdrawal that ended the longest war in U.S. history. VOA's Catherine Gibson has more.
2 weeks after the last U.S. flight left Kabul, ending the nearly 20-year U.S. military involvement in Afghanistan, U.S. lawmakers questioning Biden administration officials for the first time for failing to anticipate the Taliban's rapid takeover of the country and for sticking to an August 31st deadline for the U.S. withdrawal. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken.
There's no evidence that staying longer would have made the Afghan security forces or the Afghan government any more resilient or self-sustaining. If 20 years and hundreds of billions of dollars in support, equipment, and training did not suffice, why would another year, another five, another 10?
The administration has defended the chaotic and deadly evacuation that turned into the largest airlift in U.S. history. The U.S. and its allies evacuated 124,000 people, most of them Afghans, after the fall of Kabul on August 15th. Republicans say the White House could have avoided those images of chaos, which damaged the United States' reputation internationally. Republican Representative Steve Chabot.
We went into Afghanistan in the first place because the Taliban had harbored Al-Qaeda. Correct. And they attacked us on September 11th. Now, 20 years later, we have the Taliban back in charge there, and they have billions and billions of dollars worth of our equipment and our weaponry. And once again, they're a haven for terrorists. How is this not a debacle of monumental proportions?
Blinken telling lawmakers that while the U.S. effort in Afghanistan did neutralize the threat from Al-Qaeda, there was a larger lesson to learn about U.S. involvement overseas. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken.
While we are very effective at dealing with terrorist threats to our country and eliminating them, which we did very successfully in Afghanistan, the idea of using military force to try to remake a society is something that is beyond our means and beyond our capacity. And we need to think really hard about whether we want to engage in these enterprises going forward.
And while some Democratic lawmakers have criticized the way the White House handled the withdrawal, they argue Biden was put in an impossible situation by the deal negotiated by former President Donald Trump. Democratic Representative Gregory Meeks.
Let me remind everyone that Trump's deal forced the Afghan government to release 5,000 prisoners and offered international legitimacy to the Taliban. It was a deal that failed to require the Taliban to separate from Al-Qaeda terrorists and did not require the Taliban to stop attacking the Afghan government. The deal altered the political order of the country.
The U.S. has not recognized the Taliban as the official government of Afghanistan. Blinken said Monday that about 100 Americans are waiting to be evacuated from Afghanistan and that the State Department was accelerating the approval process for Afghan special immigrant visa applicants. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. U.S., Japan, and South Korea hold talks in Tokyo on North Korea nukes. Singapore news site suspended, and critics fear censorship. Chinese students hit by U.S. visa rejections amid tension. Beijing targets megastars and their fan clubs. Biden to host leaders of Australia, India, Japan at the White House next week. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the voanews.com website. You're listening to VOA Asia on this Wednesday. The foreign minister in Afghanistan's new Taliban-run cabinet says the government remains committed to its promises to not allow militants to use its territory to attack others. In his first press conference since the Taliban formed an interim government a week ago, Amir Khan Muttaqi on Tuesday would not give a time frame for how long the government would be in place or whether it would be eventually opened up to other factions, minorities, or women. When asked about the possibility of elections, Muttaqi demanded other countries not interfere in Afghanistan's internal issues. Turkey is calling for collective international action to deal with the humanitarian crisis in Afghanistan. The call comes as Turkey, already hosting the largest number of refugees globally, warns it cannot take any more. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
Turkish Foreign Minister Mevlut Cavusoglu, addressing a high-level United Nations meeting on Afghanistan Monday, warned that with millions of Afghans displaced and facing a humanitarian crisis, now is the time for collective action.
A humanitarian and security crisis in Afghanistan will have direct implications across the globe. So we should take the collective action now.
Turkish leaders fear an Afghan exodus through its territory as refugees flee Afghanistan and head for Europe. Last week, the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, Filippo Grandi, paid a four-day visit to Turkey and praised the country for receiving nearly 4 million refugees who fled the Syrian civil war. Under a deal with the European Union, Turkey gets billions of dollars in aid to host the Syrians. Some EU leaders are already suggesting the agreement be extended to include Afghans, claiming refugees should be hosted in locations closest to their places of origin. But Turkey's main opposition, CHP party, is strongly critical of the government's refugee policy. Ünal Çeviköz is a CHP parliamentary deputy.
It is a record of serious mismanagement. It was simply a kind of transactional type of relationship between Turkey and the European Union. And they simply wanted to stop the flow of refugees by giving some financial assistance to Turkey. A majority of the Turkish population think that burden sharing is not fairly distributed in the international community. And we are also scared that the same mismanagement will continue in the case of Afghanistan.
Senior EU officials visited Ankara last week to talk about the refugee deal with Turkey. Ankara insists it cannot take any more refugees and calls for the EU to share the burden. Some analysts say Ankara needs the money from Europe, but international relations expert Soli Özel says Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan will need more than monetary incentives to convince his people.
He will have to show to the country something more than just money, and that's visa liberalization, which I doubt the Europeans are capable of delivering on.
Visa-free travel for Turks in the European Union was part of the original Syrian refugee deal, but until now has been blocked by some EU members. With Erdogan's ratings languishing at record lows in opinion polls, and the same polls indicating strong public opposition to receiving Afghan refugees, analysts predict any new EU refugee deal with Turkey will be difficult and fraught with political risk for the Turkish leader. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, the World Health Organization calls on wealthier nations to help end vaccine inequity. Happening now in Asia, public health officials in India said at least 60 people have died as of Monday from viral fever, including 5 from dengue in northern Firozabad city in Uttar Pradesh state, raising fears the state is in the midst of its worst viral fever outbreak in years. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Thank you for joining us on VOA Asia. The World Health Organization and its partners hope to provide Africa with about 30% of the COVID-19 vaccines the continent needs by February. That will badly miss the 60% vaccination coverage goal that African leaders had once hoped for this year. At a press briefing on Tuesday, WHO's Director General called the massive disparity in vaccination rates between rich and poor countries a solvable problem. He called again for pharmaceutical companies to prioritize the UN-backed initiative known as COVAX, which aims to share vaccines globally. To date, COVAX has missed nearly all its targets and now has resorted to begging rich countries to share their vaccine doses. VOA's Mariama Diallo has more in this report.
The World Health Organization Director General sounded the alarm again on the short supply of COVID-19 vaccines in low-income countries.
Globally, 5.5 billion vaccine doses have now been administered. But 80% have been administered in high and upper middle-income countries.
He says despite talk about the importance of vaccine availability worldwide, there has been little action to tackle shortages in low-income countries.
High-income countries have promised to donate more than a billion doses, but less than 15% of those doses have been materialized. Manufacturers have promised to prioritize COVAX and low-income countries. We don't want any more promises. We just want the vaccines.
As of last month, the United States had donated more than 110 million doses to more than 60 countries worldwide. The director general, who opposes the widespread use of booster jabs for healthy people, also called for an extension of the moratorium on such shots beyond its original September deadline. This comes as Israel became the first country to offer booster shots to people over the age of 60. The country has since expanded its program to include frontline workers and people 40 and over.
I'm very happy that it's open to 40 and over. I've been excited and waiting for it.
Earlier this month, France also made the offer to people over 65 and to those with underlying health conditions. Cicely Tatogan, a medical student who's helping administer the shots at a pharmacy in Paris, explains.
Over time, there's a drop in antibodies for people who were vaccinated just over 6 months ago. And so we want to give a booster to increase the levels of antibodies for those who did it a while ago and are at risk, people with deficient immune systems and elderly people with existing conditions.
Canada and Germany have also announced booster campaigns. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news alert from VOA Asia. New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern announced that the city of Auckland will stay under COVID-19 lockdown for at least another week. After the country recorded 33 new cases on Sunday, all in Auckland, and all but one linked to existing known cases. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. As Americans continue to grapple with the economic downturn from the pandemic, state and city governments are providing funding to train job seekers in high-demand occupations. Some of that money comes from the $1.9 trillion American Rescue Plan Act to train people in fields such as computers, data technology, construction, healthcare, and hospitality. VOA's Penelope Pulu has more.
Alaji Dampfa worked as a dishwasher and grill cook at various places before getting a job as a cook at the Sheraton, a Union hotel in downtown Los Angeles. A year later, COVID hit.
So we were laid off for about 2 months. And then I got a call back to work on the senior meal program that we're doing right now with the County of Los Angeles, where we provide almost 10,000 meals every week to senior citizens, people who are impacted by the pandemic, homeless, survivors of sexual harassment and trafficking.
Dampfa says this job opportunity would not have been possible without his apprenticeship at the Hospitality Training Academy, the training arm of Unite Here Local 11, the Food Service and Hospitality Workers Union.
As of now, we have received over $50 million in government funding to provide those services, and we have brought 1,100 workers back to work, and we have fed over 10,000 individuals since April of 2020.
Aideen Foreman says that money comes from President Biden's American Rescue Plan Act, from the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act, or CARES Act, and from California's state government. The money covers training tuition, transportation, and child care. Foreman says the Academy's Senior Food Program keeps cooks and delivery people employed, hotel kitchens up and running, and provides healthy meals to seniors and other groups. Once the program is phased out, Foreman says the Academy will help transition trainees to other jobs and up the career ladder in the hospitality industry. The Information and Engineering Technologies Division of Northern Virginia Community College has also received federal and state relief money to train displaced people and others in technical jobs that are in demand.
Through all of the different infusions of funds that we've got federally, we've been able to give out almost $22 million to our students through that support.
Chad Knights is the college's vice president of information and engineering technologies. He says the college has received $10 million for initiatives to help students train in engineering technology, software development, and data analytics. He says digital technology has become even more important with the increase in teleworking since the pandemic hit.
We're having trouble keeping the students in the program because really the minute they make it through what is our certificate program, they're snatched up for internships in local positions.
The community college has built a partnership with Micron Corporation, among others, focusing on automation technology.
We were able to build out this lab and really replicate some of the on-site training that individuals would need as they progress through our program and then into internships at Micron.
Chad Knight says federal and state funds are paramount in the development of these programs at the Northern Virginia Community College. He says they are key in putting people back to work in the state of Virginia. Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
Making headlines in Asia, thousands of people protested in front of the governor's palace Tuesday against the Taliban in the southern city of Kandahar, according to a former government official and local television footage, after residents were asked to vacate a residential army colony. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, researchers in Australia have developed new microscopic lasers that have a range of potential medical, surgical, industrial, and military uses. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Researchers at the Australian National University say nano lasers promise to be even more powerful than conventional technology. The technology uses laser light instead of electronics and is an approach called photonics. Nano lasers, they say, need only a small amount of energy to start shining. Instead of using mirrors that reflect light, the team has created a device that traps energy and prevents it from escaping. That power is harnessed and builds into a strong, well-shaped beam. Researchers say this overcomes a well-known challenge of nano lasers, energy leakage. The project is a collaboration with academics at Korea University and is published in the journal Nature Communications. The lead researcher is Professor Yuri Kivshar, who says the beams would act like a torch or flashlight to guide a surgeon.
Why do we need smaller? Imagine you're doing kind of operation inside of body and you're using optical fiber. So optical fibers introduced inside of body will see only light, which inside is basically nothing. So you need kind of torch. And this torch will lighten the place which you need to work on, and that will be kind of real torch effect.
Academics have said that while their nano lasers are not the smallest ever developed, they're among the most efficient and powerful. According to the ANU study, the energy threshold at which the laser starts to work is about 50 times lower than any previously documented nano laser. The physicists believe the technology could have a range of applications in small devices, including hair removal, laser printing, nighttime surveillance, and the illumination of delicate surgery inside the body. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Finally on VOA Asia, a robot called Moxie is helping nurses and hospital staff focus more on patients by taking care of menial tasks. VOA's Dina Mitchell has the story.
Hospital nurses have a tough job, on their feet for hours caring for patients. A Texas-based startup called Diligent Robotics says it has created a robot that can help. It's called Moxie. Sarah Gray is a nurse in Denton, Texas.
You scan your badge, click the drawer that your item is in, take it out, close it, hit OK, and she's on her way to the next one.
A robot that is easy to work with. That's what Diligent Robotics co-founders Andrea Tomas and Vivian Chu are striving for with Moxie. Andrea Tomas, co-founder and CEO, Diligent Robotics.
Working on robots that were going to be side by side with people, that's really been our kind of passion about making sure that robots can be functional and safe and even a little bit fun to be around.
Before they created Moxie, the founders did their research, speaking with hospital executives and nurses about specific needs like lockable compartments that require a staff badge to open. Another for putting medicine and supplies in the right place. Moxie's extendable arm, which collapses neatly, allows it to work in tight spaces. Medical staff also needed a quick way to get Moxie's help. Here's Gray again, the nurse in Texas.
Instead of having to run down to lab and get a certain test tube, or I can just text Moxie, she'll go get it, or she'll come pick up my sample and take it down there to lab for me.
Moxie has LiDAR sensors that use light to measure distance, and its cameras have sensors that detect depth and color, allowing it to navigate on its own. Co-founder Vivian Chu explains how it works.
Drive it around, it will build a map, and then from that it can navigate autonomously throughout the hospital.
Hospital robots done well can help the bottom line, says one expert. Henrik Christensen is the director of the Contextual Robotics Institute at the University of California, San Diego.
Diligent has really understood how can you deliver a product that is easy for the people to use, that is very socially interactive, and because you get staff that does more caring for your personnel, your ratings go up.
A helpful colleague during the busiest of times. Dina Mitchell for VOA News.
Read and see more on this story at VOA Asia Facebook. Thank you for listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can also find us on Instagram, YouTube, and at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Doug Bernard, Amy Hybels, Keith Lane, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Chris Cascale in Washington. Enjoy the day. Take care now.